Welcome to the Six Figure Studio panel. I'm your host, Humberto Garcia with the High Rollers Club. And today, we're going to be unlocking the profit-boosting secrets from different studios all over the country. These people are in different sized cities. They charge different amounts for the sessions. They even have different packages. So it's going to be really interesting to hear all of their input and see where they agree and where they disagree. And we covered things such as the best place to generate high ticket leads, when they knew they were able to charge more prices and how they did it, and some of the worst places that they've found to get leads, okay? So who the F are we? I'm Humberto Garcia, and this is brought to you by me and Jen Bruno-Smith. I'm the CEO of Photography to Profits, and I'm the marketing sales funnel expert for the High Rollers Club. Jen Bruno-Smith from Boudoir by Jennifer Smith is an amazingly talented photographer who almost broke seven figures last year. And yeah, she's put this together, and we teach thousands of photographers how to grow profitable studios using everything from organic social media, Facebook ads, Google ads, SEO, like you name it. Everything you've tried and maybe failed to implement, like we have basically the end-all be-all training for, okay? And the goal for this session is to make the best panel discussion on how to build a six-figure photography studio. Today's agenda, I'm gonna let the panelists introduce themselves. We're going to go over their plans for 2023, what has worked in the past 6 months, and then we're going to do Q&A from the audience, okay? So yeah, let's get ready and let's begin. Some ground rules for this. Basically, I told the panelists and you, the attendees, to number one, be engaged, okay? Tell us what you don't agree with. Tell us what you agree with. Tell us your experiences. This is not us just talking down to you like we're better than you or like, you know, we're a higher authority. This is a panel discussion where we're talking across each other to the panelists, and I want them to share their real thoughts. And you're going to hear people disagree on things. You're going to hear discussions on, you know, sensitive topics. And that's really what we want to move us forward. And at the end of this, we want you to be inspired to go take action and stop procrastinating and to basically network with others. I encourage you, message the panelists, message them in the Facebook groups, and yeah, just network. And again, viewers, drop your questions. If you're watching the replay, you're not gonna be able to really do that. But if you do drop questions, then I'll be able to use those for the next time we run one of these. So let's get started. Let's jump into the first question. And we've been asked, what is the best place to generate high quality leads? Amy Maddox will answer this first.
And we're also, I advertise on Wedding Wire and The Knot. And just those wedding leads has brought us so many boudoir clients. Now, I do shoot weddings as well, but it's sort of like multi-tiered marketing.
Who has weddings worked for also? Anyone have a different experience or same? Allison?
Yeah, I feel like I'm kind of on the opposite. Like weddings have not been so great for me because so many brides' budgets are being tapped in that moment. I was just thinking about this the other day, actually, how I feel, I'm sure it was in the course or something Jen said, or you said, like, good clients are made, not found. And I found that really to be true. Like, in fact, I've had like a number of, like, my name's Allison, I'm in Los Angeles, Reclamation Boudoir. And there is a lot of money here. Like there's a lot, and in big numbers, and a lot of the, not a lot, but many of the clients that I've worked with that I know have a lot of disposable income, don't want to spend it the same way that I mean, I've had clients last week or this week, I had a client who lived in Inglewood and single mom, and she bought the pinup, you know, which isn't like a high sale anymore. And there was a time where I felt like that was a really high sale, you know, a $3,000 sale. But, and I've had many clients like that. So I feel like to answer the question, I have found that it's not necessarily a specific place. Not that I don't like high paying or high income clients coming my way, but it's not the be all end all in my experience.
Yeah, people have money for what they want to have money for.
Yeah, they really do.
What about you, Natasha? Okay. Best place for marketing? Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Natasha Kaufman. Jimmy, I live in Morgantown, West Virginia, although I'm from Long Island, New York. So I've lived in a lot of different places. I built my business actually in Washington, D.C. While I was getting was in a doctoral program for clinical psychology, decided I'm going to switch gears and change roles. And I've built now my boudoir studio on the basis of psychology and how we see ourselves as women and incorporating mental health. I was also recently diagnosed with ADHD last year. So just incorporating more of that neurodivergent point of view into the studio that I've created. But fun fact, I love tea shops and baking. So that's what I do outside of my studio. But I do believe that clients and finding the clients that are really excited about transformation and how they see themselves and their mindset about their bodies has been what's really defined my role in my market. Definitely West Virginia, a lot of clients are like, wait, what? How much do you charge? And I just actually had a client come from about 4 hours south of me, and they had gone to 3 other boudoir photographers in West Virginia and had many sessions and marathon sessions and hated those images, and then spent $8,000 yesterday with me and got my bombshell. So I do think that it's all about how you position yourself and how you talk to your ideal client. And each of us are going to have like a different client that we attract because of our personalities, our identities as women, or whatever role that we have is attracting that type of client. So I've really leaned into that in my area.
Okay. Where's the one place, like the lead source that you've gotten most, you would guess?
Facebook ads for sure. I've been running a few different campaigns this year actually, and I've been calling them projects, kind of modeled off of, remember during COVID, everybody was doing like a donation campaign to like a soup kitchen or like a food, place. I've done a few campaigns like that this year. I've actually been running one now that's donating to an animal pet rescue. And I've actually had 30 sessions booked in the past week from that campaign, which is awesome. And then I've also been running through Facebook ads, like an evergreen campaign for healthcare workers for 40 over 40. So I'm kind of doing a bunch of different things to really bring in all of those leads and to book those sessions. Last year I did 93 sessions and I ended up with, I think it was 477 overall in gross revenue. So it was a crazy year and I'm excited to do it again.
That's really big, especially for a small town. Anyone else in a small town on the panel? Cassie, tell us.
Yeah, my name's Cassie. My studio is Chrysalis Boudoir by Cassie K. And I'm actually not even in a physical town. I am like out in the country. The closest town to me has about 2,000 people. So my reach is pretty widespread. And my main focus, I am not a social media type person. I don't do anything on Facebook. I don't do any Facebook advertising or anything like that. Customarily, I rely on email lists. So focusing on generating that, getting that big, blogging, and then Google Ads. That has been my huge driving force to my business. I'm probably on a lot smaller size and scale than a lot of these photographers out here. I'm kind of a one-woman show, and I photograph about 50 to 60 sessions a year, but I still come just about right under 250 a year by myself. And I agree with a lot of like what the other women have said. I think a lot of it has to do with your personality. And I've always kind of focused on quality over quantity, because I'm very high touch point with my clients. And most of my clients, the closest major metropolitan area is probably 2+ hours away. So on average, my clients travel about an hour and a half to me, some 3 to 4 hours to get to me. So I think that, you know, being high touch point. So when I do get someone, you know, inquiring to me, I am on top of like following up with them, talking to them, making it really personalized and just like catering to them. So like every single lead that I get from those sources is like gold and I nurture them as much as I can. You know, and my average sale is in the upwards of around 4,000 to 5,000. Last year ended up about 4, but this year I'm kind of sitting at around 5 per client. So yeah, I'm probably the odd man out between a lot of these people because I kind of have anxiety when it comes to like speaking and being out there and putting myself out there, which I know some people do like on social media. So I just rely a lot like on that email list, Google ads, things like this. But since I've been a high roller now for quite a few years, Jen is kind of seeping in and I'm thinking about going to like bridal shows this year. Like if I can get my stamina like built up for that.
You totally should. And take it like someone with you so that you can, if you need a break, because I don't really like large crowds or I'm actually very introverted. So being at bridal shows is very draining for me. So yeah, I bring like other people with me. So if I need to like go take a brain break, I can.
I think that's the biggest thing is like being in big groups. Cause I'm exactly like that. Like I get so nervous in big groups, but like for me, brides are kind of like hit or miss, you know, like I've had a lot of the same experience that some of the people have with brides, but I've also had some brides, you know, and coming from, you know, Iowa, small town Midwest, we're very conservative. I feel like when people spend their money, like it's a big deal here, but I've had a lot of brides like drop a ton of money on it. So I really feel like it's, especially like what Jen said, you know, it is all about what people value and what they want to spend money on. And just, you know, finding that person and really kind of having those like personalities that mesh, you know, so spending like that little bit of extra time getting to know people, like they value that and they love that. And I think that just kind of brings it in that much more.
Thanks so much. Caitlin and Christina, I'm going to bring it to you just because you guys are definitely the odd ones out because you guys are newborn and maternity. And in my experience, it hasn't always been exactly like the other portraiture. So what brings in the most clients for you and where do you spend the most?
Hi, Caitlin Feinstein here from Stain Art Studio. We're located in Orlando, Florida. Fun fact, we are working with Humberto and Jen to release a new newborn and maternity focused mastermind, the Baby Whisperers. And I definitely agree with Humberto. I do feel like maternity and newborn is slightly different. Actually, Facebook is our least one that we spend money to, and that it's different for boudoir. A lot of people spend a lot of boudoir photographers will spend money on that. For us, is more Google ads. We spend a lot of money on Google ads and partnerships. We work with OBGYN offices, with ultrasound. And I feel like a lot of our leads come from there. And then one of the things that we actually photographed quite a few celebrities last year. And they actually came from two places, Instagram or Google, mostly because those, I feel like those higher end clients, they want to see that one, you're like known, you're the best in the craft, and they look at reviews. And we do have a big following on Instagram with a lot of people leaving reviews, but also on Google, a lot of reviews. So I feel like having that that part is really important for when people are making the decision. When it's not about money, it's usually about the work and what other people are saying about you.
Okay, thanks so much. I do have a question. We just took a poll and I'll ask you guys because networking was the best place to get high paying clients. Who on the panel agrees with that and who disagrees with that? Networking being the best place to get high paying clients.
Agreed.
I think it depends on your genre.
Definitely for newborn. I just said that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, networking from having owned many other businesses, some of which were business to business focused, networking business to business is super easy. Networking business to individual, a little more tricky, and you have to land in the space where that network can happen. Yeah.
Jennifer?
I think it's been SEO for me. Oh, and hi, I'm Jennifer James. My studio is Supernova Boudoir. I live in, or my studio is in St. Augustine, Florida. I actually just moved here from the DC market 9 months ago, and I'm starting from scratch. So I've always, I don't know, I'm not a really good networker. Like Jen, I am super introverted. So like I need my batteries charged very high before I can go out and like socialize. Hence why I work one-on-one with clients. Cause that works for me. But I think for the most part, my SEO kicks ass. So that's where most of my high paying clients are finding me.
Okay, awesome. Anyone else on networking?
I agree that networking is amazing. So in addition to doing like bridal shows and stuff, we also do venue, like wedding venue open houses, where we can talk with brides who, you know, may or may not be looking for a wedding photographer, but then they see our work and they're like, oh, hey, maybe I could do this. This is a good little wedding gift. So
definitely. So you're networking with like a venue or networking?
Yeah. So we're on a couple of preferred vendors, preferred venue list, but also we work with like wedding planners. So I offer my select wedding planners a discounted retainer fee for their clients. So that's another thing that I can give them. Cause you know, with networking, it's all about what can you give this other person? And so now a wedding planner can say, hey, if you book your wedding with me, you know, you get a $199 retainer fee. It's $300 off and here's her work. And so that's bringing me clients and I'm giving them added value.
Awesome. Anyone else agree or disagree strongly? Jen, you definitely shook your head in disgust.
I mean, networking is great. It is good. But you can't solely rely on that. Like I'm a big fan of marketing in all the places. No marketing is bad marketing. So you can't ever just put all your eggs in one basket. Like you have to be doing all the things. And, you know, networking is great. And we do a lot of like current client outreach and like, you know, forming relationships with other businesses. But most of my bookings come from people that I've been warming for a long time. So like when they come to you, they're cold leads, right? They might not know you as well. But then after you go through the process of email automation and they're in your VIP group, they follow you on Instagram, they're warming up to the idea. They're warming up to you as a business. So most of my clients go through, maybe follow me for 6 to 8 months before they end up booking. And that like turning a cold lead into a warm lead, even if they initially came from, is not necessarily who they initially come from. It's the process of warming them up that gets them to book. So it's great when they are referred, but if someone just cold refers me, the chances of someone booking me are a lot smaller than if I did not have that path to warm them up as a lead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's often people talk about like networking and then they talk about social media and Facebook like as two separate things somehow. But social media and engagement in your Facebook group and on your page and on Instagram, your engagement with your audience there is networking. That they are not different. It's, you know, you are building a reputation with that audience and getting to be able to talk to them. You just get to be able to do it faster on social media than you can do one-on-one in a, you know, in a meeting. So, you know, don't really treat them differently, I don't think. I think know that if you want to network, well, you can network in your group too. You don't have to leave.
Awesome. Okay. So next one is, it kind of ties into that because I was surprised that networking was voted. TikTok got 0. Networking got about 40%.
I was trying to hear the TikTok.
Does anyone have any opinion on any platform that others might think is very popular, but has never worked for them? So maybe TikTok, you hate it. Like, is there any platform that you hate that you know is popular with others?
I hate TikTok. Hate is not even a strong enough word for how I feel about TikTok. I love watching the videos, but making them, no.
I hate it too. Yeah.
You're one of the biggest TikTokers.
I know, but I hate it. Every time I make content, I'm like, I hate this. I hate this.
I don't hate TikTok. I just think I don't get it. So there's a difference between like actually having some disdain and just, I don't understand it. But Instagram is the one that like, keep, yeah, like I hear peers, you know, in other genres that are like, yeah, I get most of my business on Instagram. I dumped Facebook a long time ago, and they're, you know, and they're booking, you know, as well as we are. And yeah, I've spent more energy doing nothing and getting nowhere on Instagram than any other place in my life.
Anyone do really well on Instagram?
We do.
I know Caitlin said yes, and Amy.
Yeah, we definitely do.
I do too.
I don't get it.
Paid advertising or like organic or both?
Well, I don't know. You're gonna get to tell me that part, because I'm really just handing that stuff to you on the paid advertising part. Organic.
I meant for Amy.
Oh.
No, we don't do paid. We just post every single day, and I have a social media manager that is on top of it. So it's just every single day. And then she posts reels and stuff too. And then we'll do stories. Y'all, I don't know. I'm old. I don't know the lingo, but it's something like that.
Yeah. I definitely do really well on TikTok and Instagram with my video that I've been putting out. And I think the biggest misconception that people have about video on TikTok and Instagram, that you have to be the star of every single video that you put up there. Most of my content is my clients picking up their products and just being like, holy crap, like that's me. I do a lot of that reactionary kind of content on both Instagram and TikTok. My clients seeing their images on the back of the camera during my sessions with them. I'm all about featuring them as like the social media that I want to put out there into the world, and kind of using that interaction and sending those videos to my clients who are kind of on the fence of even booking with me. I always send them as follow-up links, like check out my TikTok, check out my Instagram reels. I think that video, and I know Jen obviously has talked about this, like the know, like, and trust factor is huge. And when clients see me, I actually had a client the other day who told me she was intimidated by how happy and positive I was on a lot of my TikToks. And I told her, I was like, that's just when I'm with you. I go home and I pass out because I'm exerting so much energy with all that content. But I do think that that really helps with like getting people to know you, getting people to know that you're a real person and not just this like commercial entity, not this, you know, scam or like whatever it is that they think that you could be, because boudoir really is vulnerable and it really is personal for me and for my clients. And so the more I put myself out there, and it does take so much energy to do so, but the more I put myself out there, the more they really get to know me and really feel comfortable with the whole experience that I talked to them about on the phone.
Okay. Big question a lot of people have, because a lot of people doubt whether they can build six-figure studios. Who has a home studio? I got Angela. I got Cassie. Angela, tell us.
Hi, I'm Angela Seats with Boudoir Nashville. I'm in Nashville, technically Mount Juliet, but just right on the outside edge. I'm like 10 minutes from the airport. I technically have a studio now. It's in my backyard, but for the first three years, I literally used my own master bedroom and my own master bath in my living room. I literally rearranged it 3 times a week. My kids hated it, but it was what it was, and it made me, you know, get to where I am today. So I'm probably one of the most shy people here, so that's why I probably won't talk a whole lot, but yeah, so I have people that are coming now to my new studio that's in my backyard because they were at my house, and now they're like, oh my gosh, I want to come to your new studio. So I'm getting repeat clients now from that, and love it. I like the long commute.
Anyone else have a home studio?
We do.
Tell us about that. How is it? Yeah. How is it hard? You know,
go ahead, Cassie.
So I came from shooting weddings and like newborn photography. And when I got into boudoir, it was just going to be a one-off. So I set up a bedroom in my living room and shot her session, completely fell in love with the genre. So I shot in my living room. So 2 weeks out of the month, our living room was a bedroom. And it was hard, and it was worth every single moment of it. Now, within that year, we started building onto our property. We have a few acres of land on our property. I'm in my studio right now, and it's small. It's like not even 300 square feet, and I can usually get like 8 or more different sets. definitely easier than not having it inside my house, but you know, it's still kind of hard juggling, like, you know, people coming to your private home, but I wouldn't change it for the world. Like I love that I can just walk into my house when my son comes home from school and be here, but then come out to my studio and work when I need to.
Are you in your home studio right now, Amy? Thanks so much, Cassie.
Yes. Yes, I have a home studio. It's technically a 2.5-car garage that I renovated into a very large space. But for years, I was shooting, you know, clients' homes. I was renting, renting studios. But I actually run 2 6-figure businesses. My wedding photography is a 6-figure business. And so what I did for like 3 years straight is I saved every penny I could, so that when I did finally find that space, I could make it my own. And it's 100% been one of the best investments ever.
Awesome. Tell us, if you have a commercial space, how did you know that you were ready for a commercial studio?
So I started in my house, in my 2-bedroom condo outside of DC, Northern Virginia. It was an 11-by-13 square foot room. So what is that, like 140 something square feet? So really, really tiny. And my clients would walk in and they'd be like, oh my God, I thought you lived in the mansion, just because I was like a professional furniture mover. I outgrew that space. Like when, you know, you have albums like stacked on your coffee table and wall art leaning against your fireplace and your husband staring at you like, when are you going to do this? You kind of get forced into, you know, going into commercial space. And so I'm now actually now on my 3rd commercial space in, I think, 4 years. And this should be permanent for a long time, but I think, you know, like you'll know when it's time.
Awesome. Anyone else? I know Caitlin, you guys just moved, right? You just got a new commercial space.
Yeah. So we actually had a commercial space back in California. We moved from California 3 years ago. When we moved, we just didn't have the time to look for one. So we actually just rented a house and just turned the house into a studio, primarily because we have a lot of stuff. Back when we started doing newborns, it was in the house, but we have so much stuff that you can't literally fit in a house. So that's what we did when we moved to a new space, kind of started from scratch. We rented that house, kind of built the studio up. And then when we felt ready financially, we got a commercial space.
Awesome. Somebody asked that they live in a 2-bedroom apartment and have felt embarrassed and don't feel that they can be charging luxury prices. Can anyone speak to that?
Absolutely. I started in my 1-bedroom apartment and I moved things around in my living room area, and I was charging, you know, the same pricing that I am now. I also then, I started there and then I moved to hotel rooms, and I made, I think it was $400,000 my first year after switching to Jen's pricing list. And I don't think it matters about the space that you're in. It matters the experience that you give your clients. And of course, making sure that you're posing to sell and you're giving them a lot of variety and a lot of different positions, so you can sell a lot of images and make those high sales. But it's not about the space I have now. I rent a townhome that's reserved just for my boudoir studio, but it's really bare bones. Like, I've never been a set person or like a lot of stuff person. I'm very minimalist. My ADHD brain can't handle keeping track of any other things. And so I think, again, it's just about how you deliver the experience to your clients. It's not about the stuff.
I agree. I've been shooting in commercial. I have a fairly nice commercial studio that we exclusively shoot intimate portraiture and boudoir. But I mean, that works for me, but I think it's all about the experience that you're going to give your client. Like, you know, if your head trash is saying that, oh, I don't think people are going to like this, that's the way you're going to come across. So you got to make sure that you dump your own head trash, leave that at the door, and present it to your clients the way you want them to have the experience. Sorry, my dog wants to be part of this too.
Awesome. Speaking of which, this actually kind of gave me an idea for the next question. And this is for somebody who wants to be vulnerable, because a lot of people do have a lot of like inner dialogue and like limiting self-beliefs. So can anyone speak to a current or recent self-belief where you guys really doubted yourselves And then something happened where you overcame it. Too hard, too oblique of a question.
That's a hard question. That's a hard question. You know what? I want to say about that 2-bedroom apartment thing for a minute, because I started shooting in my house too, in the same exact room that I'm filming from now. It's a 12x12 room. And I was running a $500,000 studio from this house. And at that same time, I had 3 small kids under 7. So I was just telling someone, I was on a call earlier today, and I was saying the same story, and they would walk by my living room that had toys piled up, right? Like in a pack and play. And they would walk by it on their way to the bathroom to change. And in those 3 years and probably 400 or 500 clients, not one person ever said one thing. And these were $5,000, $6,000 sales then too. So I think that almost people appreciate that. Like they know that you're a real wife, like this is, you're a real person and that you have a family and it is what it is. And I don't think anybody ever, as long as your home is clean and safe, like I don't think anybody would ever. And in fact, people now, when they come to our studio, because it's a house, they will say, wow, like, this is so nice. I was expecting like cement floors and I don't know. It's very homey and comfortable. You know what I mean? So people appreciate that very much.
I agree. And I built, you know, when I joined High Rollers with you guys back in 2019, I was still in my condo and I got close to 200,000 that first year, just out of that little studio or out of that little bedroom. And nobody batted an eye at it. They loved it.
Awesome. Next question. What was your biggest ROI in your business? Whether it's time or money, what did you apply yourself to or spend money on that has brought you the biggest results?
Ours is easy. Ours would be our client closet. So I invested about $35,000 over the past 5 years in a client closet. And we have over 1200 lingerie sets. Our sizes go about extra, extra small to 6XL. And I cannot tell you how many clients have come in and said that they booked us. Obviously they loved our style, but they booked us over one of our competitors because they knew they didn't have to buy a single piece of lingerie. And the other benefit to that is I know that any woman can walk into my studio, no matter her size, no matter her shape, and I'm going to have at least 10 outfits that I can put her in. They're going to flatter her figure. They're going to look amazing. And then because, you know, most women don't own lingerie. And if they do own lingerie, it's like baby dolls. It's flowy stuff. It's nothing that's going to look good, you know, in photography. And so for me, that was our biggest return of investment. And I have a shopping problem. So
I would like to say that my biggest ROI is investing in myself, like in the High Rollers and another, the class and the education that I've done, because that's been huge in empowering me to believe that I can do it. And if you don't believe you can do it, you can't do it. So that's the beginning for me.
Totally.
Yeah. I agree with that a ton, because I feel like that was the first thing that I actually even spent money on when I decided to jump into boudoir, is I got a mentor. And having that mentor and having someone, and it's so funny, I didn't speak up when you were talking about the self-limiting beliefs, but like, I literally probably have them daily. Like I am so hard on myself. So when you're like, name one, I'm like, I can't name just one. There's like 100, you know, and, you know, overcoming them and having like that education and someone who's like a cheerleader and show you that they can do it and how what they overcome, it is so, so helpful. And then I think also like investing time with your clients too, you know, the most that I like invested was not necessarily like a dollar amount. It was my time in creating just an amazing process that answers so many questions for my clients. Like when they walk through the door, they know that they have a good handle on the day and what's going to happen, and they can be confident in everything. So like really investing a lot of time and effort into that process to prepare my clients and having that one-on-one time with my clients. I mean, it has like quadrupled my sales average over the last like 3 years, just from that alone, I feel.
Awesome. Before we go to the next person, I'm going to say that I just dropped a poll that says, what's your level of dedication in photography? And most of the answers, 66%, is like the ultra consumed. Every hour that they have, they try to use, which is awesome. So please drop in the chat, like tell us more about that while we continue. Chris, what were you going to say?
I think for me, the biggest ROI has been other people. Delegating out all the stuff that I need to not be doing. When I hired a studio manager a couple of years ago, she's unbelievable. I mean, she basically runs the entire back end of the business. A full-time dedicated hair and makeup people instead of trying to piece it together for every shoot. I've got somebody making calls for me now. I've got, hiring Humberto's team to outsource the social media and marketing and website and ads. I don't know, maybe it was a couple of years ago. I was doing a webinar like this and I was talking to someone and they asked about my developing process and someone chimed in and they're like, you need to quit doing that crap. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, why are you developing pictures and like outsourcing that? It's like, no, I'm really good at dealing with clients and doing the clicky part, but the rest of this crap I should not be handling. And the more I don't do that stuff, the more I like what I'm doing. So the revenue goes up, but that's secondary. It's more enjoyable.
Awesome. The question is still, what was your biggest ROI?
Yeah, I think mine this past year has been investing in myself and kind of work-life balance again in some ways, which has, I know, been an ongoing topic. But I, as an ADHDer, first year I've been, and second and third year have all been hyper-focused on just reaching big money goals that I had for myself. Numbers are really comfortable for me to kind of figure out what works for me. I've never been afraid of numbers, but being able to kind of invest in going to yoga class, doing a retreat in Hawaii that I went to in February, like making connections with some of the therapists and other kind of mental health, yoga, wellness people in my area that, really connect with my ideal client, would connect with my brand and my mission and purpose in helping women kind of heal some of the trauma and body image issues that they have. And I've had so many clients come to me now this past year who are divorced, who are single, who are widowed, and just looking for something that's different than just a normal kind of boudoir, give it to a gift for someone else. So I think getting back to like me and helping myself kind of heal some of my perfectionism too that I was dealing with, because I've done everything myself for the past 3 or 4 years, and hiring a new kind of online business manager to help me plan this upcoming year and getting back time for myself. I think you just get into a rut sometimes and you have to kind of reinvigorate yourself too and your work and make it something that your soul and you're excited about going to and providing an amazing experience.
Awesome. Anyone else on that? All right.
I think a lot of the things that were said were like really true. And I was like, oh my God, like all those things were true in our business. And one of the things that like were more recent for us, or like a year or two ago, was when we got the new studio, the commercial space, we designed a lot more sets, especially for maternity. I feel like in the maternity world, it wasn't as much as about the sets, but I agreed with Amy too. We have a lot of stuff, like I said. So I feel very comfortable when a pregnant mama comes into the studio and we have 10 different outfits for her. And it's why most of our clients book us, is because we provide everything. They literally can just walk in, not bring anything. We'll do the hair and makeup. And I feel like that is one of the biggest reasons they book us, but also creating the different sets allowed us to have a lot more variety and we started selling a lot more different pictures. I think that's a big part as well.
Can I ask you guys a question? Can I jump in and ask a question about the wardrobes?
Yeah, go.
Do you guys choose the outfits for them?
Yes, we do.
Okay, that was my question. Because I'm always afraid that they're going to show up with nothing and then they have to try things on and it's like, oh God, like I don't feel great in what I wear. And it's like, I don't want that vibe and energy right before they're going to shoot.
We present ourselves as the experts. So we basically say, come in, we're going to pull things that we know from our experience will look good on your body type, your skin tone. If you want to browse the client closet, you're more than welcome. But that leads to, what do you call it?
Decision fatigue.
So we, and most of our clients are like, oh, thank God you're going to choose for me. So
like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
We got you, girl.
I think it really depends too on like your studio, because I love it when they bring in things that they love, like things that are not lingerie. I actually lean into that a lot, like white button downs, t-shirts, sweaters, flannels, cowboy boots. I had a client yesterday bringing a racetrack helmet, or she like races cars. I've had clients bring in boxing gloves. Like, it really just depends on you and what you love to photograph and what you love to shoot. I get really bored of lingerie. I love lingerie, but I love both kind of like versions of women. Like, we're not just one thing. And so I love when they bring in things. And then I also have a client closet too that I keep stocked, that I know I have like in my back pocket. If they like bring in all black or all baby dolls or all this or all that, like I know I can put them in this and they'll look amazing. So it really just depends on you and like how you feel comfortable and kind of guiding your clients through the experience and what you love to shoot.
Okay. Here's another question. This kind of goes into the theme for today. How do you run a successful studio without shooting every day? Someone is overwhelmed by even shooting once a week. So they want to know how you even manage to do that volume.
You scale. You have to scale. I mean, when you want to grow, you have to scale, or you charge more so that you do less work and you're making more money. But scaling leads to freedom. And I have 3 associate photographers now that shoot for me. I've shot maybe 10 sessions this year to date, and the studio is a shade under 200,000 in revenue. So it's awesome. I do all the IPS still. I keep all the IPS sessions. I don't want to give those up, but maybe eventually I will. But right now I still really enjoy doing them. But this year on my schedule, I have about 50, and I'll probably take about 10 or 15 more.
Anyone else? Anyone else like doing a lot or moderating themselves?
Yeah, I went from doing, so last year we shot 243 full sessions last year. Yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. Not great. I'm trying to get that down to 160 to 180 for me, just from a work-life balance. I like to play a lot. I don't work on weekends. I don't work more than one night a week. I take months a year off to go goof off and do crazy shit. And I can't do that and shoot 250 sessions. It just doesn't work. So for me, like, if I actually end up making some more money because I'm raising my prices and doing less work, that's great, but the money's not driving me. 4 sessions a week, 2 days of doubles. That's all I'm in the studio, and I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I think talking about like capacity and like how much energy you have for clients versus like your everyday life, again, talking about work-life balance, is something that I'm learning about and talking about a lot in my ADHD kind of groups, and figuring out what is your right kind of energy level. And for me, it's always been about 3 sessions a week. If I do more than that, I always feel a little bit just tapped out. And even sometimes 3 is a lot, just depending on the day. But I think kind of booking yourself at least 3 a week, because you will have attrition, you will have reschedules, you will have cancels like Jen talks about. So I even try sometimes for it, just, you know, finding your happy average per month is really helpful. And then of course, like building up your sales average so that, you know, you're reaching the kind of money goals, or, you know, sales, student loan payoff, retirement, all the things that you want to reach for yourself and your business is really helpful.
Anyone doing not that much volume? I know someone said average maybe once a week. Someone said 50 to 60 clients a year.
Yeah, that's me. I do between 50 and 60. I knew, like, starting out, I never wanted to be a high volume studio, and anything over that to me feels very high volume. I wanted to kind of keep things intimate. I'm a huge introverted person. Like I get in situations like this and usually I'm kind of a spaz. So I'm good that I'm keeping it together today, but
you're doing a great job. You're doing great.
But you know, like right out of the beginning, I just kind of knew my threshold. Like I love being one-on-one with people. Like I actually really enjoy that. But like Jen was talking about earlier, like it takes a lot out of me. So, you know, for me, I knew my limitations. I knew that doing more than that, you know, that might change for me in the future. And I might feel comfortable having like staff underneath me to outsource and scale and do those things that like Jen's doing. But for right now, like with where I'm at in my life, it's just like my energy, what I can put into it is, you know, maybe a couple a week. And that's, you know, and that's okay. And it's a matter of, you know, when you have to sit down, it's like, okay, you know, it's exhausting for me to do one. That's great. You know, but look at the logistics of it. Like you're probably not going to make, you know, six figures, you know, maybe possibly doing that. But if you are, you're going to have to charge a good amount and you have to provide that experience and have like those touch points to kind of demand that higher price that you're going to want to be. And you have to be able to be okay with that. You know, either, you know, I'm not going to be making like $500,000 a year and that's okay. But at the same time, like what's that trade-off for making the $500,000 a year? Does that make sense?
Yeah. How long, who raise your hand if your shoots take less than 90 minutes? Raise your hand if they take less than 90 minutes.
Wait, from the actual shooting part?
Actual
the shooting whole part. Experience from the time they walk in the door to the time they leave?
Yeah. For just shooting.
Yeah. 90 to 120.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe right around 90, maybe a little bit more.
So how do you guys stay on the short end?
Well, we have like a set number, like we do this pose at the set, this pose at the set. And I trained Hunter to be at the posing specialist. So while I'm setting things up, she's showing them the pose or vice versa. And it's cut our shoot time down by at least 30 minutes, maybe more. Mm.
Who shoots on the long end?
Definitely do.
How long, Jen? How long, Jennifer?
At least it's usually like 2 hours. I'm really excited if I finish in 90 minutes and I'll tell them, wow, this is a record. And then we laugh. But I'm a lengthy shooter. I've tried to cut it down and I just can't. So I roll with it.
For me, it's just based on the vibe of the client. Like some clients, we get through stuff really quick, but you know, if a client needs a little more care, then we're there for their convenience. They're not there for our convenience. So I build in, you know, plenty of time in the daily schedule so that, hey, if they need to take a break a couple of times, if they've got some physical, you know, things that they're, you know, it's a little tougher for them, I'm not rushing them. They're paying me a lot of money. I can be there an extra half hour and it's not going to change my life one bit.
I do everything all in one day. So hair and makeup takes about an hour and a half. I like to shoot about an hour and a half, give them a break for an hour, and then they come back and I do the IPS. So I usually tell my clients 2:30 to 3, and I want to make sure I get them out by that time because a lot of them are moms, got to pick up their kids from school. So I don't feel like I rush them ever. I don't, you know, I'm never on that. But I just kind of keep them going, changing the outfits, and let's keep moving.
Awesome.
Well, I think it depends on genre. Our sessions are very long, but that's because you can't reason with a baby. Don't even ask how much.
How many people, raise your hand if you have a very solid retirement plan? Okay, we got some hands raised. Let's go, Amy, you're shying away. Why is that your answer?
No. So I'm still in this is our second year of business. And I would say I'm still at that phase where I'm obsessed with my business. I live, eat, drink, breathe, photography, courses, podcasts. So right now we're in the growth phase. So I'm not there yet.
We haven't looked at an end yet.
Yeah. Right now we're in the hustle stage. Yes.
Who else is in the hustle stage? Not wearing, that's somebody else's problem. Retirement, somebody else's problem.
I think Mallory, she brought up student loan payoff. And I think, I was in a doctoral program for clinical psychology, and it's what spurred me to kind of build my business, because I knew that that would be a big thing, to be able to create more income for myself, to be able to pay off my student loans. And that's always something that I juggle with. And I actually hired like a financial advisor last year to kind of help me figure out student loan payoff versus retirement, and like how I could do both at the same time. And I think that that's like an ongoing conversation, and figuring out kind of what works for you and what works for your studio, and being able to grow your studio and also take care of yourself as well.
Awesome.
I think, yeah. I don't know, I've got to be one of the more senior people, age-wise in the group. So, I think there is a point at which you do have to start facing that. Like that there's a reality that it can't do this forever. So there's got to be an exit strategy. I think it's really easy to get caught up when you're, in the first couple of years of your business, when you've got 20, 30, 35, 40 years ahead of you, and feel like, oh, I can just focus on the hustle and someday I'll get to the retirement thing. Trust me, from someone who's getting closer to the retirement thing, don't do that. That's a really bad plan. So if your parents are telling you, you should be thinking about retirement, you're like, hey, I'm in the hustle phase. They're right. They're just right.
I've stopped contributing for a little while, just because like building a studio is very expensive, and I didn't work for like 9 months. But my husband and I did just drop a huge chunk of change into an annuity as part of our retirement plan, just based on the recommendations of a financial planner that we hired last year, 2 years ago. So,
anyone else experience with retirement? Hate the topic. Cassie, what do you guys say? Caitlin, she's still on.
I worked for a financial institution for 16 years prior to doing this. Uh-huh. So, I transitioned into being a business owner in my mid to late 30s. I mean, I'm in my early/mid 40s. And it was just not an option for me. I mean, I left a really good paying job. I mean, they were putting, for every like 5% of my income I was putting in, they were putting in 15%. So like 20% of my income was going into an IRA, or not an IRA, a 401k. And it's, I don't want to be living off Social Security, if I even have Social Security when it's time for me to retire. And I do want to retire. So it's like, for me, that was one of the first pieces, not only like the income that I'd make for my business, but putting that money in for retirement. And yeah, I mean, Chris is like, so right. Like you have to like think about that. It's a part of your salary. Like you need to think about, okay, not just what I need to pay my bills, but like planning for the future. It's that loan officer in me just like, oh no, you got to think about that.
Well, I also think that people, like when you see people are like, oh, are you saving for retirement? Like my guess is most people are thinking like IRAs, 401k plans, annuities, investments, like all that stuff is true. I'm a former accredited investment fiduciary for big corporate retirement plans. So I lived that world for a lot of years. But as a photographer and as a business owner, buy your studio, invest in the real estate, right? Let your business pay that off instead of paying rent. And at the end of it, you've got something that's actually worth something that is part of your retirement. So, it doesn't always have to look like, oh, well, I don't have time to put anything in an IRA. How much are you paying a month for your studio? Could you be putting that into a business you own instead?
I feel like it sneaks up on you too, where like, you're like, oh, I'll do it. I'll do it then. I'll do it in like 2 years. I'll do it in 5 years. And then like, you get to where like Randy and I were like 38 and we were like, oh, we've really got to get ourselves together. And I don't handle all of that. Randy does. So I had him text me, but I guess we have traditional retirement assets. Plus we utilize cash flow banking policies through life insurance to purchase cash flowing assets like businesses, property, and crypto. Our goal is to overfund our cash flow bank and use it to have diversified hard assets, real estate, and other businesses. That is from Randy. Yeah, that's, I would not have come up with all of that on my own, but that's Randy. But it is true. I think that we, like, as business owners, we're so focused on the hustle that you don't, you know, you're like, I got to do it now. And it is very, you know, hard to kind of look past the hustle for the future, but your hands can't work forever, which is why you have to plan for retirement, or you have to scale so that, and scaling is my other retirement plan, right? So, like, I have 3 associate photographers. My plan is to eventually have more and potentially a national brand. And so that's like the long-term retirement. You have to, like, continue to plan for your business too, I guess.
Awesome. All right. So moving on, this is to the last phase. There are a couple questions here in Zoom that I'll get to, but before we get to that one, that way you guys have time to type them in. Moving forward, what are your goals moving forward? Obviously you guys grew to this stage and now there's different problems to have. So what are your plans for the next 2 years, and what kind of challenges are you facing, and how are you going to overcome them? Cassie, you were the first one on the list because you said that, you know, you're still kind of boutique style. So is that something you're trying to get past, like go past?
Yeah, I actually probably the last 6 months, like, I've actually sat down and taken a really hard look at, you know, what so many of the other panelists have said, being a perfectionist. I'm like, it's not so much like perfectionist, but like holding on to things, because like my business has been my baby for so long. But I have started outsourcing a lot, like over the last year. Like I learned to like be able to let go of some things and then trust and what that looks like. So looking at hiring an assistant for this next year to handle some of those things that I probably don't need to handle, so that way I can focus on. Because I think that's a hard thing, like when you're boutique and you are on your own, you don't necessarily have like a sounding board, where being a part of like the High Rollers Club and stuff like that, that's been my sounding board and seeing what other people do. But, you know, no one knows your business like you know your business. So having that sounding board within your business, and then I can have that much more time to really focus on growing my business too, where that's something that I really haven't as boutique, you know, 50 sessions a year doing it, you know, 99.9% on my own. It's a lot of work, and I don't get the time that I want to dedicate to scaling and growing. So yeah, that is something. And maybe I won't scale past that like boutique, but, you know, being able to outsource and hand off some of that stuff, so that way I do have that opportunity. But right now it's kind of hard once you kind of max yourself out.
Okay. Who else? I know, Chris, you mentioned before you did a lot of volume before, trying to drop that down and increase prices. So how is that endeavor going?
You and I have been working together for 2 months now, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think we swapped our price list about a week after you and I spoke. And yeah, the cost per image in our price list didn't really change. We still charge about $100 an image if you break it down. I mean, that's kind of what it is. My average sale has basically doubled this year in the last 2 months. So that combined with just not freaking booking myself to death, because, like, you know, I want to help everybody now. And like, it's kind of nice. We have clients calling in that want to do a shoot in 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, if you want to do it in April, you're going to need another year added on to get me in April. And yeah, it's okay. They'll wait. And it's okay.
By the way, I will say, obviously, like we'd spoken before about this, and you've been in business for a while, and, you know, do you mind if I say what was the average sale before?
I think I was just under like 2 grand, maybe between 1700 and 2 grand was normal.
So what made, like, because obviously there was a belief where maybe you thought, you know, your market couldn't withstand it. Like what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What changed? Was that true that you could?
No, it was totally in my head. Like it's all our own head trash. Right. So I've been in business. I've been shooting since I was 14. So that was 38 years ago. But I've had this studio open for 8 years exclusively for this. And when I started out, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that I may have done a couple of shoots where it was $200 and they get everything they want. But in all honesty, when I first started out doing this, I couldn't believe anybody paid me $200 to do this. So, you know, I was like stunned that that would happen. And I remember raising my prices from $200 to $500. And I mean, I know like in relative terms of what we do now, we are so far above that. But the first time I had to talk to a client on the phone to tell them my prices, and I said $500, I literally wanted to throw up on my shoes. And I was ready for the battle. I was armed. I was ready for them to say, well, that's too much. And how dare you? And they said, how much was it? And I said, $500. And they said, what should I bring? And I went, wait, what? No, I said, $500. Did you hear me? I said, $500. And they just kept going. It's funny, that happens at like every level. You know, my top package was like $3,000 up until now. And now my top package is $10,000. And no one blinked. Like, I was the only one that blinked. The market didn't. The market was already there. So yeah, it's our head trash, not the market's.
And can I jump in too? So, I mean, as some of you know, I moved to Florida from DC. DC is a very affluent market. And I was told by another photographer, I won't name names, that the reason that I did so well right off the gate was because DC is so affluent and people have so much disposable income. And so I made it my mission when we moved down here to like repeat that process here and do better. And, you know, my bookings have been slower because I don't have the brand recognition down here that I did up in DC. But my average has continued climbing. I think I'm at like 5,500 in Northeast Florida, where the population is 1/6 of the size of DC and like 40% lower cost of living. It really is a mindset thing. And then going back to what Jen said at the beginning of this is people will pay for what they really prioritize and want.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think making your business work for you. And again, I've seen a lot of people mention about ADHD, and that's been my experience this past year, almost dismantling my business. That was taking too much of my energy and kind of rebuilding it this year with like my energy in mind and capacity in mind, and bringing on people to help and support me with all the goals that I've had in mind, I think is so, so important. And just really recognizing like where you are in your business and all the mindset elements that kind of come in, like Chris was mentioning, and Jen, I mean, we bring so much into our work, and I still am constantly shocked by sometimes some of the self-sabotage that I have going on, like, oh, you know, I don't need to do this today, or, you know, whatever it is that we're prioritizing. And it's a constant daily thing to kind of recognize those things and be able to overcome them, and to be vulnerable and to show that like we are imperfect people and we're, you know, reaching goals that yes, we have for ourselves, but it's, you know, it's something that's ongoing.
I think we all have moments, and we hear the word, like the term imposter syndrome, like thrown around a lot, right? And I think that we all kind of like lean into that because it's the words, it's what everyone says when we're feeling that uncomfortable feeling, right? But growth comes from fear. So I don't necessarily think that it's feeling like you're an imposter. It's more just feeling the fear of growth. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because when you're feeling that discomfort or fear, it typically means that it's time to grow. So when I'm feeling that discomfort, because we all do in all areas of life, right? Not just in business. I try to step back and I think to myself, but what am I scared of? What is the fear that I'm going to fail? I mean, well, I'm not going to fail because it's not an option. So you know what I mean? So I think you have to go back to like, what is the source of that discomfort? And what everyone else was saying, like, when I added that $12,000 collection to my menu, I was like, no one's ever going to buy this. I'm not ever going to sell it. I'm not going to try to sell it because no one's going to buy it. Someone bought that collection. And wouldn't you know it, I was like, someone just bought that collection because I didn't believe it would happen either. So I think the first step is always, you know, believing in yourself and coming back to that when the little voice, the self-talk is saying the worst thing that could happen is you could fail. You have to be like, so what? Like, I'm not going to fail. And if something doesn't work, you pivot and you try again. That's the most successful entrepreneurs are able to recognize when they need to pivot and they do it. They don't think about it. They do it. That ability to take action is key in sustaining a business because at this point, you know, you stagnate or you grow, you know what I mean? And you can't, you got to grow. You have to keep pivoting and growing.
All right. Awesome. Let's go on to lastly, we got about 5 minutes left to this. Really quickly, I'm going to go through some of the questions. Networking with wedding planners. How did you originally reach out and did you offer discounts to their people? Probably for you, Amy.
Yes, I did. So, I mean, shooting so many weddings every, you know, every weekend, obviously I would meet tons of wedding planners and I would just offer it to any of them. And I would make sure that while we're like sitting down eating dinner, I would talk about boudoir. I would, you know, show them my, you know, Instagram or whatever. And then many of them just, it got to the point where I became so, just not to sound conceited, but like recognized in the wedding industry that when I would show up to a wedding, the planner would come up to me and say, hi, I'm excited to work with you. Don't you also shoot boudoir? Because we show like on my Instagram, it's boudoir and weddings all in one. So because I'm showing both, they're interested in both. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing that. Next question is, what if somebody's not having any traction and everything's really slow, like what's the one thing they can do to turn things around?
There's a cheater answer to that. And that is hire someone that knows what they're doing and have them do it. Right. And yes, that's going to cost money. And if you're a business owner, well, welcome to owning a business.
My answer is putting yourself out there. For me, social media has been the driver of my business. I'm only now getting to Google. I'm only now getting to Facebook ads 4 years in. For me, everything started when I was vulnerable with my community, when I was friend requesting every single woman that I could find who worked at a local hospital near me. I was just blatantly, putting myself out there, sharing my story, sharing my own personal life, my puppy images with my clients. And I was truly myself. And now was sharing my ADHD story also and learning about my capacity and things that I've, you know, been perfectionist on or not, you know, just being myself has been the reason why my clients are attracted to me. So I know that that's the hardest thing to do, but just coming to a place where you can kind of share that with your local community and they'll be attracted to it because they'll love that you're a real person. You're not just a business.
Awesome.
Go
ahead. I'll go next.
I was just going to say, jumping on Natasha's point, I think really being vulnerable with the people that follow you, it can be beneficial. I know there's like, you know, there's people in the camp of like, you know, keep it really professional and don't show too much of yourself. And that, I mean, it's fine. It works for them. A lot of people know I'm a domestic violence survivor. And so I talk about that a lot with my clients. And I get a lot of domestic violence survivors in my studio who are looking to overcome what they've experienced with me. And, you know, honestly, it's healing on both sides. But I think just being vulnerable, people are going to be attracted to your energy, to your specific energy, which also makes it easier to find clients or make clients than find them. So.
Yeah. I think the whole idea of like putting yourself as you out there, your clients, look, I'm going to say this with all due respect to all the amazing photographers that are on this panel and it probably in the 92 people that are watching, but the fact that we can take a good picture means crap. Us and a billion other people can, right? What people are buying is our ability to provide that experience and their trust in us. And the only way they're going to trust us is if they get to know us. So if if you try to keep yourself at arm's length, your customers will too.
Nice.
Can I have a thing? So I agree with all those things. But also I feel like when we were in a moment where like no one's like booking, you know, you're kind of slow, for us, it was always like the mantra, like fake it till you make it. Like when someone calls it in and you're like, they're like, I want to book. And I'm like, I don't know. Like I have to check my schedule. And it's funny. Like, I think like back then we're like, I don't know, we're booked for a year in advance. And back then it was like a lie, right? But now think about it, you're like, oh my God, like we're booked. Like it's so like, you know, like fake it till you make it, because you're definitely gonna make it.
What is it, what Jen Bruno Smith always says? People want what other people want. Is that what you always say, Jen?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. People want what other people want. I mean, that even in like elementary school, my daughter comes home and she's like, Lexi has this, Liza has this, I want this. I'm like, oh, yeah. It's true from the very, very beginning. Like, we want what other people want. And so, you know, providing an amazing client experience, branding yourself in a very solid way. Those are all things that lead to that brand awareness and brand trust, so that when people need your or want your services or want these services, they think of you first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And creating desire. Like for me, that's always also been something I've come back to. Like we have to also remember, like some people know what boudoir is, but they don't know what our version of boudoir is. Like each of us has our own version of what we provide, and like really being honest and sharing that, like that's what is going to bring us all the clients and count that.
Okay. Second to last question is, any tips on finding a social media manager that's on top of it? I'll rephrase this question to say, like, how do you just hire really good people to do things? How do you find employees?
I found my social media manager in the mastermind, the 2.0 group.
She's like another mastermind member?
Yeah. Well, no, she was referred by another. Awesome. So yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, that's a great resource. That is a huge community of photographers and great way to network.
Anyone else? Employees? You could just hire your stepdaughter.
Yeah, that's kind of cheating, isn't it?
And Cassie, you were saying that you were scared to hire an associate or an assistant because you're such a control freak. Girl, I am the most intense control freak, but I promise it will save you so much time and effort, and you'll be so happy you did it.
You just have to find
for me, it's, I think a lot of the fear that surrounds is like, how do you explain to somebody else what you do? You know, it's like, that's like the hard part, is conveying all those little things. It's like, until you like sit down, and that's why I've been like looking at it over time. It's like, how do you sit down and like quantify, like, holy crap, like this is what I do. So I need to get over that hump and like stop being scared. But
pieces, right? Like, don't give someone like all the things all at once. Cause imagine if someone gave you a list of 45 things and we're like, learn all these things and do them really well. You would be like, I'm not here for this. So even like, you know, Nikki has been with me for 10 years. I still am giving her new tasks, right? Like I just gave her the album design tasks 10 years later. So I'm still giving her new things to do. And I want to comment really quickly on like letting people in and like the vulnerability thing. I think that you don't have to put everything out there, right? Like, I think you can do it with, you know, with still being reserved about things that you feel like. I would not put things out there that you are not 110% comfortable with people knowing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you have to have a platform or you have to have that vulnerability. I think you can say, like, I stay away. I don't really show any, like, there isn't really a thing for me, like, besides being a mom, and that's it. And it's okay because people still hire you, but I do connect with my clients on being a mom, right? Like a lot of my clients have that, I have that in common with them. So I think like seeing some of the, you know, side comments where people are like, I'm not sure what to be vulnerable about. Well, I don't think you have to like figure it out. I think you could just be a really good business owner and relate to your clients on a personal level. And I think that's enough. I don't think you need to like, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for everybody. And you feel for it. You should not force it for sure.
That genuineness, I guess, people feel it because when you're forcing something like that, people will be like, oh, I don't know. But, and so you really, it has to come from a genuine place. So if you're someone who's like, oh, I don't know if I feel comfortable like saying this or doing this, then that is your inner business voice, your inner voice in general saying, don't do it. So, you know, I think instead focus on just being genuine with clients and trying to relate to them. And keeping in mind too, that it's about them. It's not about you. So you don't want to go to a session and do all your stuff and say all your stuff. You want them to feel comfortable. So
yeah, you should not be like blowing at their session. I think for me, like it's more about in the marketing aspect is where I mentioned it. Like it's on my website and occasionally I might talk about it on social media, way less now than before. But yes, the session totally reserved for the client. Like they should be feeling like they're the star of that show. You know what I mean? Sure. So
It's just like nuggets and pieces. And I think that like when we talk about vulnerability, we think it's like a word vomit, like everything. And I think, again, as an ADHDer, I've learned to kind of keep certain things to myself, but obviously share and relate to clients in a way that, you know, I'm asking them questions about themselves, them questions about like their personal experiences, and then maybe sharing like a tidbit here and there about mine. But I think, you know, making them the star, making them feel like they are the center of attention is so important. But I think as well, like as a ADHDer, I've learned to also share things that I used to not share because I felt like it would be too much. So it's a balance of back and forth. And I'd love to talk with anyone else more about it. But I think genuine connection is all about a back and forth. It's not a one-sided thing.
I think genuineness is like probably better than necessarily vulnerability because, you know, like we all have things that, like for me, being genuine, just period, is vulnerable because, you know, I grew up and I was bullied as a kid. So me sharing anything like about my personality, I'm always fearful that someone's going to judge me or someone's going to think badly about me or think certain things about me. So it just kind of results from that experience. So for me, just like telling anybody about me or that I love like 90s hip hop and I love like movie quotes and like stupid things to me, you know, like, oh my God, that's going to give them ammo to make fun of me. Those are the things that people get drawn to. And they're like, oh, I like that too, you know? And oh, that's kind of like a nerdy thing that I don't want to tell people about. So it's more about, like you said, like being genuine, I think then, and that's just like a vulnerability in itself. Like it doesn't have to be something like a really big, huge platform to like speak about, but it's just your willingness to like share about yourself makes people want to reciprocate that. Like they see that and they feel that and they just, I think, feel comfortable in that, whether it's like in your marketing or, you know, one-on-one with clients. I feel like that's just kind of like an over universal like feeling.
I love that feeling that you can, even when you're talking now, you get that from you. Now, this is just you. This isn't something you're putting on. And I think that speaks to that we're genuine. It's like, just be you. You're not going to share the same level of vulnerability that you share with your partner in life that you do with your clients. Well, I mean, I hope not. Because one of them you're screwing up. I don't know which one it is, but if they're the same, one of them's not right. authentic and be genuine because they want to know you're human. They want to know that they can identify with us. I'm kind of a oddity, you know, obviously on the panel as a male-bodied photographer, like, you know, people walk in the studio and they want to know that like we're real people. We have families too. And, you know, my dog will probably be there and I'm going to talk about my grandkids and like that's going to happen. And just because I want them to know that I'm actually a real person. because it's real easy to get, you know, for any of us, for any reason, to be like, oh, well, you know, you're this, so I'm going to assume that. So
I think building a team comes down to that too. Like, I have really failed a lot with building a team last year, with like trying to like give people too much, like Jen was saying, too quickly, like not knowing how to break down tasks, like you're saying, Cassie. Like, I've gone through a lot of like trying to figure out how to do those things. And I found my online business manager through an ADHD coaching thing that I started going to, which is like my own little mastermind on the side. And learning that like my brain works differently and I need to be able to do things differently and not shaming myself and not kind of contributing to like the perfectionism that I was holding on to. So learning what works for you and how you communicate with your helpers, with your however way, like it doesn't have to be a full-time employee. Like, I'm working with contractors. I found an assistant service also that was recommended to me by other photographers. And I found like a virtual assistant who does my calls now. And I spent like a whole month kind of training her, but finding what works for you is just so important.
I do think I was just going through a messaging and branding training. And I think like the best way I could summarize it was, he said that he would have clients that would bring him like brands and websites, and they would ask for like critiques. And what he would really try to like pull out of them is like the problem, like the dragon and how you're slaying it. So it's not necessarily like for me, I'm a perfect example. I'm not a photographer, but I have to like communicate to photography problems and photographers and their marketing and their sales. I don't like ever use my personal issues. I almost never share, you know, anything like, you know, anything I've been through, even though I've been in the military for 10 years. But I can help by telling other people's stories, by highlighting other people. So I never really have to like put myself in the seat and always just kind of communicate like that. But, you know, just focusing on how do you present the problem and how do you present yourself as like the slayer, where you guys are like the common, team against that. And it doesn't always have to be with like you putting yourself in the center of it. It could also be done by storytelling, with case studies, with, you know, client testimonials, with sharing other women's stories, or whatever genre, you know, you're doing. That's a topic that, you know, a lot of varying opinions on. Okay, last question. Someone did ask, did I miss the part? Because Chris answered, how do you get more bookings if you're slow? They said anything besides just hiring someone to take over, like what can they do, like low cost, like something physically they can do on like the next day to like get butts in seats and make money.
Giveaways. The giveaway with the flash sale.
Okay. Anyone else? I mean, that is a good one. Chris just ran one and he said we could share the results of it inside the mastermind. So we're going to go like deep dive into it. But I think he booked over 50 sessions, right, Chris? But I definitely think, you know, that's definitely a little bit of a complicated one, although you might be better at setting them up than me, Jen. Anyone have anything like you can do in like a day or two?
I send out every now and then a last minute opening. So I'll send out an email or in my VIP group, and almost always I get that booked. And that's maybe not 3 or 4 bookings, but it's the one for the next day or next week that I needed to fill.
Awesome. Anything that where you don't require a list? You don't need a list or following.
Friend requesting, for me at least, like has worked really well. I know a lot of people have a lot of icky feelings too around that, but my Facebook is not my personal Facebook anymore. It really is a representation of my mission and purpose and helping women heal through boudoir photography. And just like making those connections, like you were saying, Chris, about like networking through Facebook. The fact that women see that I have like 50 other friends that they have mutual friends with makes me more of a real entity than if I was just like direct messaging them like, hey, come book a session. So really making those connections. And then yes, of course, you know, starting those conversations, prospecting, you know, that's like the basis of all marketing, is just like getting to know people. And then of course, putting an offer out there. For me, the donation kind of campaign, I felt really connected to more so than a giveaway. I ran a giveaway last year and I honestly didn't feel like at all in the zone like I had previously. For this, I'm now like contributing my session fees to this animal pet rescue. And I got a puppy about 2 years ago now. So I've been in puppy world for the past 2 years. And it's been really helping me connect with my clients who also want to donate and want to give back to a pet rescue and then also get a gift certificate towards a session. So I've really loved that campaign and kind of making it my own, because that hadn't been something I saw that anyone else did in that way, but I chose to kind of put up my spin on it.
So anyone else, anything they can do in a day or two?
Never discount the hustle. Like, wake up, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, find some people, have a conversation that you were uncomfortable having. If you are a business owner and you're sitting waiting for it to happen, you won't be one for long.
Okay. What about Caitlin and Christina? Give us input from newborn and maternity.
Well, you can always like run a project that's like model call, just like get people in and then offer like a couple prints or a couple images and then try to upsell them at the APS.
So really quickly, one thing that I don't think anybody has mentioned yet is using social media to really harness the bookings. And typically people will respond when there's something new or something exciting, and you can recycle material. So like, you might have gotten a new prop like 3 or 4 months ago and already posted about it, but post it again. And Instagram stories, I remember back in like 2019, 2020, Humberto's like, you got to do stories. You got to do stories. I'm like, I don't want to do stories. Like, you got to do stories. People watch them. And you know, maybe about 2 years later, I started doing stories and I really noticed that people relate to them. They look at them, they respond to them. If you put links in your stories, people will click on them. So don't just put a story up. It has to have some sort of engagement so that people will respond to it. And I'll always put like, message me, right? Like, this is your call to action. There has to be some sort of call to action. I have to tell my followers what I want them to do. So putting direction on that story, something, some sort of like really like clickbaity type of thing that people want to do. And then what is the call to action? Message me, go to my Facebook group, whatever. There has to be both the clicky, the thing that they need and they want, and then also the call to action.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much. Been about 90 minutes. Thank you for all the panelists that showed up. We did have some last questions. People wanted to know like, how they could see all of your amazing work, how they could become like familiar with you guys. So if you are on the webinar or you're watching this somewhere else, Facebook or whatever, we will be sending an email out with the replay link on our website. We're going to have their studio names, their locations, and a link back to them. And I encourage you guys, if you guys are part of the free group, you can look everyone up by their name. I think everyone's name matches Facebook. So you can definitely friend request them, connect with them. And yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. And that's why we brought this together, because I asked a question in a Facebook group, like, what would you ask somebody if you were sitting at coffee with them? And then I was like, oh, I know a bunch of studio owners that we can ask these questions to. So I took all those questions, you know, I distilled them, and then we answered some questions live. So super helpful. And you guys can give us feedback because this is the first time we've ran this. But I really hope you guys enjoyed, and yeah, hope you're inspired. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. Thanks everyone for joining.